your life reimagined. Look up to the sky.
This is Voices of Soul. Join Gene and Lori for intuitive advice and assistance in all areas of your life. Combining years of experience in the psychic and healing arts and helping you find your answers and create the reality you desire and deserve.
They got nothing on you, baby.
248-545-SOUL. Believe. Use skyradio.com. Nothing
on you. All right, good afternoon. This is not Voices of Soul. This is Intuitive Soul. And we are here today. We're going to talk with Jeff Brown on his documentary, Carmageddon. Voices of Soul will be next week with Gene Adrian. So, all right. So I have to say, we had Jeff on, I guess, back in December, and we talked about his new book, and then we said we were going to have him back to go over his documentary. And it's quite the documentary, Jeff.
Yeah, not normal.
Well, you know, I like the title. I like the idea of karma and Armageddon coming together.
Yeah, easy for you to say. You didn't live it, but yeah, absolutely. It's the right title for the movie, I think.
Well, I think we have all had our stories with either a teacher or a guru, or a guru that thinks he's a teacher, or a teacher that thinks he's a guru, and, you know, the kind of things. If you've been on the path for any length of time, we've all had our very interesting experiences. Now, yours was taped, so I admire the fact that you love to, you know, get yourself dirty and go into, you know, the bits, like the dark bits of what can happen. So why don't you tell us a little bit about, you know, why you made Carmageddon and how it sort of fits in? Because I guess initially you must not have thought it was going to be Carmageddon when you were initially videoing it.
Yeah, the original title was loosely Shadow and Light. So we definitely knew you can't hang out with Bhagavad Das for more than 5 minutes without realizing the shadow is going to play a part in it. You know, we didn't know exactly the form that was going to take. That was impossible to predict. But we definitely, you know, felt that what we were trying to do was focus a lot, at least in the first part of the interaction in the filming, on the light, on his message, on his wisdom. You know, he has a lot of wisdom. And, you know, at the same time in the original interviews, I was asking him all kinds of questions about his reputation with women and, you know, his shadow and unresolved shadow or resolved shadow and all that stuff. But for sure, it went in a direction that was more shadowy. I mean, I think I probably thought we were going to stick more with the shadow as a theory, not as a lived practice between the two of us. But, you know, you don't know. He's such a character. You don't know. And so, you know, the film, he came three times, and we filmed each time. The journey itself in the first part really was the lighter part, and the shadowy part was the second part when, you know, as you saw in the film, things happened, things went missing, and, you know, there was the whole experience with the 18-year-old girl and him coming back to be with her and all that. And the last part, the third part of the journey, was after kind of figuring out who he was, in my view at least, was my trying to figure out why I manifest him. Because ultimately that's really the question, right? It stops becoming about the guru or the teacher or whoever it is in our lives. And we have to ask the question, why did I manifest this? And, you know, what does it reflect in me? Who is this in me, I think is what I said in the film. And what were the lessons attached to that? Yeah. So it was really a full cycle journey, I think.
Okay. So you knew of his reputation prior to starting your... Mm-hmm. Okay. So
oh, sure.
Was...
Oh, it was legion. I mean, it's... Yeah. And I'd seen him around before, and, you know, sure. I mean, Joya, a well-known spiritual teacher who just passed away, she had named him Bhagavan Dick. You know, there was never any question that he loved the feminine, or, well, that's a question, but that he had been with a lot of women. And,
right.
A lot of young women. He was known for being in the company, marrying, what he calls marrying. I don't know if we'd legally agree that that's marriage, but a lot of women who were young, you know, in their 20s and so forth. I think he's with a woman now who's in her 30s, which is, I think, a forward step for him. Yeah. Although, having said that, I mean, he was married a few times to people right. around his age, and so he's been all over the place. You know, we filmed an interview, some footage with him where he talked about what he called his first girlfriend, and loosely speaking, I guess, when I think he was like a high school student. He used to go and hang out. I think her name was Dorothy, and I think she was in her 70s, you know. I don't know that he was intimate with her or anything. I can't remember that part of it. But he loves being around feminine energy for all kinds of different reasons.
Right, right. Yeah, okay.
So I knew. Sure. And I inquired into it in the original interviews, even in that positive section. There was no place for it in the film, really, because that was coming later. But I asked him all kinds of questions about his reputation and what was true about it, and this fundamental question, which I would carry forward throughout the movie in many ways, which was, you know, can you be an enlightened being? I mean, well, it's a difficult word to define anyway, but can you claim to be that if, in fact, you are living out some unhealthy patterns in your relational life? There are a lot of people in the so-called ungrounded spiritual community who don't see these as relevant. You know, how you behave in your personal life is not who you ultimately are on an essential level. And I have a real problem with that, but that's really the kind of answers that I was getting from people for a long time.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's discernment is very, is an interesting topic all on its own mm-hmm. in figuring out how do we know and how, you know, every single person will teach us something if we allow that to sort of unfold. But we certainly do get a lot of beings that say they're enlightened or that yeah. they're guru status. And, you know, they go through their drama and then they go through their drama and say, well, that wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for you, or that wouldn't have happened yeah. if you didn't need to see or experience something in your life.
Yeah, it's a lovely gimmick. and certainly there's an element of truth to it. But for me, there was no question that I had something to learn. Now, the question of whether or not he behaved the way he did in the desire to actually bring that into my consciousness was a whole other question. You know, and I asked Ram Dass that question in the film and in the interviews. I said, you know, intentionality was my question. Does he intend this? Because there are gurus out there. Chogyam Trungpa was known for this, who would, you know, apparently go out of their way to do things that made you uncomfortable in the hope of helping you. And I've got to believe there are some people doing that with good intentions. I don't believe Bhagavan Dass did that. I think most of what happened was a consequence of his own unresolved material. But, you know, in the ungrounded spiritual community, these lines, you know, they use no judgment as one of the ways to get away from it. They use deflection. They use projection. They use you manifest this because this is exactly what you need to learn. There's a whole list of things that they use in order to continue to get away with self-serving behavior. And, you know, for me now, if somebody claims they're enlightened, I know they're clinically insane. That's my number one premise. If you say you're enlightened, you're clinically insane. So that saves me a lot of trouble. But to learn that lesson, I really had to have this kind of experience. I mean, we've got to stub our toe somewhere, right?
Right.
Yeah, and we're here to learn. So we're going to learn in all kinds of ridiculous ways. And in this case, I learned in some pretty ridiculous ways.
Well, and yeah, I mean, it's an interesting, the whole journey that you had was very interesting. The fact that you, you know, got it on tape is, you know, mm-hmm. a more fascinating aspect of it.
Yeah, well, that tells me it was destined to happen, right? I mean, just such an odd set of circumstances. Usually when people, you know, describe these kinds of experiences, they don't have footage. I mean, they write a book if they do anything at all, right?
Right.
Seems so odd that it all happened on camera, right?
Yeah.
It's interesting. Yeah.
And so much happened on camera.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, Baba can't control himself, right? I mean, he says whatever he wants to say, and whatever, you know. And when things were on camera, there are a number of things we couldn't include in the film for all kinds of legal reasons. But we had way really extreme things that came out of his mouth, and you know, he sensationalizes things when the camera's on. He knows what he's doing.
Right.
You know, it took me a long time to realize that he really got that. He is very American like that. He really got that, right? Mm-hmm. You know, he knew how to build energy like that, and so he would say startling. You know, even this scene, there's a few scenes in the film that people are startled by. The scene where he admits that he broke his virginity with a 14 or 13-year-old Egyptian whore. I mean, who says that on camera unless they want to say it on camera? You know, yes. And where he talks about being the reincarnation of Anne Frank. you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That explains so much of his journey.
Everything. Now we understand. Right. I worship young girls because I was Anne. Whatever. I mean, it's just so ridiculous.
It's hysterical.
And it's also perilous at the same time.
Well, it's just amazing that somebody would discuss as much as he did discuss. I mean, if you want to see this documentary, which you've gotten great reviews on it, and it's a great look into the shadow side of gurus. But just be prepared. There's a lot of very frank discussions and a lot of vocabulary that some people would be very offended by.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's
him talking.
It's not a
soft-touch documentary, that's for sure. It's a miracle it came out of Canada. I mean, it's... No, really, it is.
Yeah. No, it's...
Not for the faint of soul. But at the same time, you know, I mean, we put it up for... You know, we've had it up for... download and DVD sell and did real well over the summer, even though we're still in festival phase. It won Audience Choice Award in Costa Rica International, so it's people love it. And we put it up for free view early December just for 3 or 4 weeks, and I think we almost 15,000 people have watched the film. So it's
nice.
People are loving it, even though it's uncomfortable for some of them.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
It's cool.
That's
what you want a documentary to do, you know.
Totally. It's definitely there to... Just to, it certainly isn't there to inspire you, but it's definitely there to inform you of things that, and obviously, you know, he's not the only person that this happens to. I mean, there are lots of gurus out there that we've all heard the stories of their sexual exploitation, using that power, that spiritual power to exploit women and families. And I guess you pick your poison.
Absolutely. I had a lot of resonance with him. You know, I chanted with him he's an amazing chanter, and I had real profound emotional breakthroughs chanting with him. So he had already a real built-in credibility for me. And he, you know, I don't want to get too into the details of what I reveal at the end of the film, but I had a lot of transference to him that's really how it works. We have transference to certain individuals, and we're here to work stuff through it. So many people are not responding to this film as a guru film. They're just responding to it as a film about how we pick whoever we pick, including our family in our lives, and what lessons we're here to learn by picking those people. We've all picked people, and we look back later on, and we can't believe we picked them.
Right.
You know, I mean, there's not a human being I know that doesn't have people like that in their lives.
Right.
So he was one of them for me. And you know, and I really do, in a way, know why I picked him, you know. And there were good reasons.
Okay, we'll get back to that when we get back from break.
Right on.
Okay, so we're going to go for our first break. You're listening with Jeff Brown. Jeff can be found on the web at soulshaping.com, but if you want to know more about the movie and what we're talking about, go to his website, Carmageddon the Movie. So Carmageddon is Carmageddon, themovie.com, and you can find out more information there. You can download it or order it as a DVD. We're on Sky Radio, powered by CBS.
Coming up Monday on New Sky Radio at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, it's Intuitive Soul and Friends with host Lori Houston. Coming up at 2 p.m. Eastern, it's interviews with Donna Vasaki and Kimmy Rose. Join Donna and Kimmy for in-depth interviews and conversations with today's spiritual leaders. At 4 p.m. Eastern, it's The Crystal Andrus Show with Crystal Andrus and Natalie Hughes. Empowering, enlightening, and educational. The Crystal Andrus Show is a no-nonsense live coaching show that will lift you to the highest levels of consciousness. Coming up at 5 p.m. Eastern, save your money with Tony House. Tony has the tips and insight to help you save tons of money every day. At 7 p.m. Eastern Time, it's Visions with Barbara Mackey. Dial in early. The phones are hot. And at 9 p.m. Eastern, it's Angels and Answers with Artie Hoffman. Sexy and intuitive. All kinds of fun. Dial in and join Artie with the party on New Sky Radio. For more on these shows and all New Sky Radio shows, check out newskyradio.com/show, New Sky Radio, and radio.com, powered by CBS Radio.
CBS Radio's The New Sky.
Back to Intuitive Soul and Friends with Lori Houston. Call Lori now.
248-545-SOUL.
CBS Radio's The Sky.
The Sky.
Welcome back. This is Intuitive Soul, and today we have Jeff Brown with us. Jeff is usually found on the web at soulshaping.com, although his presence on Facebook is probably where most people know of him. And today we're talking about his documentary, Karmageddon. You can go to his website, karmageddonthemovie.com. I'm sure you can also get links from Facebook as well as from Soul Shaping.
Yeah, it feeds off soulshaping.com.
All right, perfect. We've been talking. It's very interesting documentary, and what's most interesting is that you caught so much of it on film. Mm-hmm. And I guess right before the break, you were sort of talking about part of this as your own journey, the people that we sort of pick in our lives. And I think that's a fascinating piece because, you know, really everybody that we meet everybody has a lesson that we could learn from them, or there's a reason why, or we like to think there's a reason why they're in our lives. And this was an interesting one. Because of his chanting?
I think there are key members, say, of the soul pod, I call it. You know, like there are primary people that we know when we encounter them or read about them or something, that there's something more than average about the potential impact. There's some stickiness about the connection. You know, we meet people like that. And he was one of those people. When I first saw him chanting in Harbin Hot Springs, I was there with a woman I was involved with, deeply, belovedly connected to, and really having a hard time fully opening to. And so I chanted with him, and that night I opened to her. And, you know, so then I knew the moment he sat down, he felt familiar to me, the way Eddie Greenspan in Criminal Law had felt familiar, and the way Ram Dass felt familiar when I saw him in Toronto, like they were somehow going to be part of my journey. And so he was definitely one of those people. I didn't know the form it would take, but and at first it was a purely positive experience. I chanted, and the reverberation of the chant opened me, and I had a lot of emotional release chanting with him in Toronto. And you know, we went for walks and talks and became friends, and I had great talks with him. He's an amazing guy to hang out with, you know. You know, you just don't want to go in for the hug. I mean, that's the dividing line. Don't go in, just go to the, you always, everyone on a spiritual path should go chant with Bhagavan Das. Just don't go in for the hug. Just chant and leave and listen to the talks and the teachings. And so absolutely, I had a lot of positive resonance, but there was something else in it. I just needed to have the journey with him in order to uncover what that was, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So there was one, there was one family where a lot of this sort of played out. I mean, there was your own personal thing, but there was one family where a young girl, he was, I guess, his next attraction, and how it impacted the family when she refused to have sex with him, and therefore he then no longer wanted her as part of his, to go touring with him.
That's correct. So they were a really good juxtaposition. In a way, the parents, we interviewed the parents in the film, you know, she was an 18-year-old woman, and when we first were shooting this in Toronto, say like trip number one, she was in the audience, really beautiful, young, you know, kind of his type. There's some footage of her talking about how she's sort of excited about reading his book and all that stuff. So she's kind of a little smitten, you know, like a young person is. But, you know, and then he came back on the second trip, partly because he wanted to sort of partner with her or connect with her. And he told us he wanted to marry her and he wanted to bring her to Europe on his next tour as his, let's say, his helper, right?
Right.
Yeah, and so we filmed that, and then she rejects him. She says she, you know, because she turns out to be a whole lot more grounded than she appeared in the initial footage, and she didn't want anything to do with the 60-year-old man, and, you know, just wasn't even viable. And so we filmed the parents, and the parents' view is much more similar to my view in the first part of the movie, where they're creating a positive spin on his behavior.
Right.
You know, that he came, you know, that he's egoless, he's transcended ego, that he's come into the house, you know, in an effort to elevate their consciousness, basically, by teaching them things they needed to learn. And, you know, I know that the father had been reading Neem Karoli Baba's book, where Neem Karoli Baba was doing that. And may have somehow assumed that Bhagavan Das had that good intention as well. And, you know, and so they just give their story and sort of juxtaposed against my experience, because that's the second part of the film where I'm now really feeling very negative about Bhagavan Das. And you know, they don't feel any different to me. People come down on them, but they don't feel any different to me than I was in the first part of the movie before I really got to know him, you know?
Right. Well, and it's not, I mean, that's the whole question, is that, you know, that's what we start questioning within ourselves as soon as something like this happens, when we think that we're dealing with somebody who is more enlightened or who is a true guru, or, you know, if there is such a thing, and that's it's that connection that we're hoping to have the teacher teach us.
Yeah, we're projecting God. I mean, we're not ready to see God in the mirror yet. We're such
a
shamed humanity still. We collectively carry so much shame and self-doubt. But we're willing to project God onto other people, and you know, we're going to keep suffering for that until we stop doing it. You know, and that's part of what it is. And part of what it is the fame projection. He became famous, at least in the spiritual community, as a result of things positively Ram Dass said about him and Be Here Now. You know, he brought Ram Dass to the feet of the guru, you know. And so, you know, Ram Dass said Bhagavan Das is the one who knew he was solid through and through. I think those were his words. So by the time Bhagavan Das came back to America, Be Here Now had been written, was now a best-selling book in America. And he was now a famous guy, you know, and, you know, that fame projection is one of the great diseases of modern man, really. You know, our unwillingness or inability to see someone in human terms once that projection gets ignited. And so that has a lot to do with what starts to happen. I think it happened to me, too. You know, I think that just feeling like, wow, this great being, right, allegedly great being was coming to stay in my little house, you know, suddenly they get a little traction. They can get away with a little bit more than any other person could. It takes longer to figure it out because you've got to bust the projection, you know. And then when you throw in that the nature of the fame has to do with something called enlightenment, that is the God projection, it gets even more dicey and complicated. You got a lot of work to do to break that one, you know, because we want that so bad. We want God staying in the house with us, don't we?
Sure, yeah. We do.
God's coming over.
Yeah,
he's going to stay for a week. I'm going to do his laundry and get him his food, and his energy is going to bless my home. It's like, you don't want to let that go. It doesn't happen very often.
And the same with a woman who thinks that she may be able to have sex with
God.
A god.
Yes.
You know, I mean,
look
at that.
That's
too.
It. That's exactly it. Have
right.
Sex with, yeah.
With God.
Yeah. God, the wisdom of the 18-year-old woman in the film was, you know, she didn't care if people thought he was God. He was over 60. She wasn't interested.
Yeah.
You know, maybe she wants her gods a little younger, I guess.
Right.
But, you know.
Understandably. Well.
But it is, we really do need to look at, you know, not that he doesn't have accountability and responsibility for his actions. I mean, I'll never, ever forget that. I mean, but at the same time, we do really have to look at why it is that we don't stop projecting this nonsense onto people.
Yeah, that deep, deep desire to have it shown to us instead of finding it within, like it.
Yeah, we're so collectively shamed. It's we can't believe we're magnificent, but we can somehow believe somebody else is. And, it's all backwards.
Yeah.
It's all backwards. We'd stop doing this if we could just find our own value, and you know, I think we'd be a lot more. We wouldn't be so desperately clinging to the idea that God's coming over for dinner. Yeah, no, it's really something. It was a big part of it for me. We didn't get so into that in the film. It wasn't time for that. The film was already too long, but I did want to, in one narrative, I did address that. We removed it, really, just how desperate I was in myself for the God, but for the male God. You know, that was really a big part of it, for the awakened masculine, for the God-man that I could rely on. I found God in the feminine time and time again. I don't have a hard time with that at all. But I've had a real hard time, as many of us have, finding it in the masculine. You know, a man I really believed in, that was really a good and wise man, and well, benevolently intended and all of that. And, you know, I mean, now that I look back on it, how I could have thought Bhagavan Das was that guy seems patently ridiculous. But I did.
Of course.
I did, yeah. You know, he reminded me, like, of my, you know, I've had a lot of crazy relatives, like, And I'm a little crazy, so it was like I was kind of comfortable with his kind of crazy, zany uncle thing, you know?
Right.
You know? So I was willing to sweep some other things under the carpet until it got so big that it knocked the bed over.
Right. Yeah. All right, we're going to go to our next break. You're listening to Jeff Brown. Jeff can be found, Google his name. He's kind of all over the web. He's definitely got a huge presence on Facebook. His first book, soulshaping.com, and his documentary that we're talking about, Carmageddon the Movie. Again, Carmageddon is spelled Carmageddon, themovie.com. We're on Sky Radio, powered by CBS.
Enlighten, empower, enrich. This is CBS Radio's The New Sky. New horizons, no boundaries. Radio's The New Sky.
Back to Intuitive Soul and Friends with Lori Houston. Call Lori now.
248-545-SOUL.
CBS Radio's The Sky.
The Sky.
Hey, welcome back. We have Jeff Brown with us today. Jeff can be found mostly through his first book, soulshaping.com, although he's done a second book, and we are today talking about his documentary, Carmageddon. I guess let's start now with kind of your own, I guess, the personal thing that happened to you that kind of really forced your hand at bringing some of this out, although not as disturbing as some of the other things that happened. It was kind of shocking.
You mean the stolen picture stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It just you know, I mean, you'd sort of already knew that he had stolen things because you went to his apartment.
Oh, yeah, no, I'd heard many stories. But you know, he, I couldn't understand anything that was happening with him.
Right.
I couldn't relate to it. It didn't make sense to me that you come into someone's house who's making a film about you, who's ironing your clothes, who's doing your laundry, who's feeding you, and then you steal from them. It's just like quite startling to me, this moral framework. Now, I understand now more about the guru entitlement complex, all that stuff. But it was really, and the woman that I was with then, Tarni, who interestingly, this is how it gets interesting, how the soul pod works. I had met her at an Ama retreat in Toronto that Bhagavan Das had told me to go to. She had gone there from Edmonton to Toronto, flown for her birthday because she was originally from Toronto. She went to see Ama, was about to leave Ama that night at about 11 at night or something, when she encountered a woman whose name is Mira Groff, who had come up from Pennsylvania to help volunteer at Ama's. Turns out Mira Groff was, unknown to Tarni, Bhagavan Das's former wife. Mira Groff, out of all the thousands of people there, somehow interacted with Tarni, told her to stay till the morning because there was a special morning chant. Tarni decided to stay, and soon thereafter I met Tarni. And then Bhagavan Das ends up coming into my house on trip number two, a week after Tarni came to from Edmonton to move in to live with me, and then Bhagavan Das steals Tarni's picture. And it was a picture of Ama.
Right.
This is how the soul pot gathers, and you know that you're gathering to do something. The odds of all that are one in a trillion. So clearly the linkage is obvious. There, we were coming together to do some work together.
Right.
Right, in this lifetime. And so, and it's in the film that, you know, he took Tarni's picture and then hid it downstairs on the table. And then after he went out for a walk with the 18-year-old girl, who was telling him she wasn't going to be involved with him, we just spontaneously filmed Tarni looking for this stolen picture, and we filmed her finding it.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really shocking to me. I mean, I just don't work that way. You know, I mean, I have my issues, but I just don't work that way. And I was really, I was enraged. And, you know, there's the cube scene has become well known in the film where I take pictures of him and I shred the pictures cursing him. And, you know, I was physically, absolutely enraged at him. Yeah.
Right. And that's a good psychotherapy.
Oh, yeah.
Release.
It was really healthy. I mean, it was that's the kind of anger release you want. You know, then you, if you do that, you don't hit people, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You just shred their picture and move forward, you know.
Yeah. Yes.
We did a lot more hitting of that cube with him after that, but we didn't.
But you did.
No need to film it. You don't need a whole movie of that. But it was a powerful moment. It was really real for me. I called my Zaid is my best friend and co-producer. I said, "You got to come here. I'm enraged, and I just want to bring the camera. We got to do this." And you know, it was storing up all day. It was really intense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but yeah, that's sort of grounded spirituality for me. Like bringing back in the emotional body, bringing back in the resolving of the emotional body. You know, and not seeing that as something distinct from the emotional life is distinct from spirituality. You know, I've only grown in my spirituality through my willingness to submerge into my emotional processes, you know. So he gives you a wonderful opportunity to do that. You either go into the feelings and learn the lesson, or you just keep doing the bypass, reframing his behavior, you know, calling yourself judgmental and stopping the judgment, you know, which allows these people to keep doing these things. So I think I went in the right direction. I mean, I think that was the direction to go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, you know, and again, it was very real and very intense for both of you.
Yeah.
And I guess that sort of led, had you started interviewing people before the second one or?
Yeah, there was, I had interviewed all the Omega people, Sean Korn and David Premel and Matin and Waugh and Robert Gass and David Newman and David Life. All of them had been interviewed in the first part of the film as part of a simpler question, which was how do I reconcile the so-called enlightened being or something with this chasing of young women. I was just at that stage of confusion. This was before, like, you know, let's say the truth hit the fan with me personally with him, right? It was more theoretical at that point. I was just having doubts about how to understand all of this. because I didn't grow up with this ungrounded Eastern trip that splits off spirituality from behavior, morality, right? For me, there's no distinction. If you can't claim your heart chakra is open if you're behaving in a way that's not caring and compassionate towards others. So you can't claim to be an enlightened being. It just can't be true. So I was, figuring it out. I was writing Soul Shaping. I was figuring out what this all meant to me. What is spirituality? What's the weave with the emotional life? All that. And, he was a wonderful, on every level, there was enormous learning. The name of my second book, Ascending with Both Feet on the Ground, a lot of that came from my learning what grounded spirituality was and wasn't from my time with him.
Right.
Yeah, he was a great teacher in that way. I don't think he intended to be a great teacher, he just was.
Right, and that's the difference.
Yeah, absolutely. And I asked Ram Dass that. I said, where I'm stuck is, and at that stage in the journey, so after all this happens, I go and I interview Ram Dass in Maui, and Ram Dass, lays it down. He lays it down in the film in a way that, was quite courageous in that community because mm-hmm. they don't believe in gossiping. And
right.
And I asked him, and I said, where I'm stuck is on the question of intention. I get that what he does isn't okay, or what he did wasn't okay. But, and I said, maybe his intention is to be a fire starter, right?
Right.
And he said, no. No, it's not his intention.
But, I know that there's a lot of different people that sort of worship Kali, who is an interesting goddess to worship because she is definitely the destruction goddess, and he certainly talks a lot about her. That seems to be one of his but that's all in itself. Kali definitely helps with the shadow side and helps with,
she's a dark mother.
Yeah.
The picture that he took of Alma was a picture of Alma dressed up as Kali. That's why he wanted the picture so bad. It's now a picture that the Alma people don't want out there, so we didn't use it in the film out of respect for that request. But that was so excited him, that particular picture. Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of them, that's their storyline. They get away with the shadowy behavior because they claim that actually they're doing it for the benevolent intentions. Like, Kali has, the tsunami happens because there's overpopulation. It's all, this dark stuff is intended ultimately with benevolent intentions. And, of course, that's not always true. So many of the Kali worshippers are just people with unresolved toxicity. So this is, they've now found this story so they don't have to go deeper and deal with their material.
Yes.
That's the game, right? I mean, it's just that's the game.
Unfortunately, it does seem to be the game. It's part of what we kind of, the spiritual bypass. It's a thing
that
we try
to
do.
Yeah, that's all it is. Really, what it is just dissociation, right? I mean, it's like, people talking about the power of now who aren't in their bodies, people talking about, the way you deal with the pain body, Tolle writes about this. You just witness the pain body and it dissipates, and now you have presence. I mean, come on. You can't have presence if you don't work through your material. You're not even in your body if you haven't worked through your material,
Perfect.
We're
going to go to break, though, so
you got it.
That thought. You're listening to Intuitive Soul. Today we have Jeff Brown. We're talking about his documentary, Karmageddon, the movie, Karmageddon, themovie.com, or get it from soulshaping.com. And we're on Sky Radio, powered by CBS.
Coming up today on New Sky Radio. At 11 a.m. Eastern Time, it's the Jane Wilkins Michael Show. Jane has helped change lives by encouraging listeners and readers to become better than before. Coming up at 1 p.m. Eastern, it's Radio to Thrive By with Dr. Pat. At 3 p.m. Eastern, step into the Spirit Salon with Laura Lee, the sane psychic. Joyce Jackson is on at 4 p.m. Eastern, bringing sanity when love feels a bit crazy. Let Joyce Jackson help you ride the roller coaster of love with style. Kathy is in with host Kathy DeBono at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. You won't want to miss a minute of the crazy fun with Kathy and her friends. Coming up at 6 p.m. Eastern, Reverend Linda Newman and Tom Forrest have the answers to life's most pressing questions. Yours on Answers with the Astro Bank Lady. Get the latest from the stars with Zoe Moon and the Zoe Moon Astrology Show at 8 p.m. Eastern. tonight on New Sky Radio. For more on these shows and all New Sky Radio shows, check out newskyradio.com/show, New Sky Radio, and radio.com, powered by CBS Radio.
Desperate for changing, starving for truth. Closer to where I started, I'm chasing after you. I'm falling even more in love with you, letting go of all I've ever longed to. I'm standing here until you make me move, remaining by a moment here with you. We're getting old, I'm lacking, completely incomplete. I'll take your invitation, you take all of me.
Radio's The New Sky.
Back to Intuitive Soul and Friends with Lori Houston. Call Lori now.
248-545-SOUL.
CBS Radio's The Sky.
The Sky.
Welcome back. This is Intuitive Soul. Today we have Jeff Brown with us. You can find Jeff on the web. His big presence really has been through Facebook, where he gives quotes for the day and has a lot of active participation on his on all of his different groups and his pages. So check him out there, but you can find him on his website, soulshaping.com, which was the name of his first book. And today we've been talking about his documentary, Karmageddon. So you had a story that you said.
Right. So this is the other side of Bhagavan Das, right? I mean, these stories are legion with him. People having profound Shakti experiences around him. And, you know, my best friend had a whole, like, horizontal lightning experience with him before getting on his motorcycle and having an accident. And, you know, he really is something like this. So the first night he came to stay in my house when we were shooting in Toronto, I was woken up at about, it was the beginning of May 2005, I think. I was woken up in the middle of the night, about 3 in the morning, by a big, gigantic bee in my bedroom. And it wasn't really bee season. I mean, I hadn't seen any bees yet in the city. My window was slightly open, so I think we know how the bee got in. This was a really big bee, and And it was like there was something about this bee. This bee was not afraid of me. This bee was like hovering, looking at me. The bee almost looked like it was like some kind of a human bee or something. It wasn't normal. Nothing was normal. And he was in the other room, and the energy in the house had already shifted. You know, it's like you've never seen anything like what happens in your house when he comes in the house.
Okay.
So I get up, and I grab a wood stick, and I start sort of prodding at the bee, right? And the bee is kind of like, I don't know, the bee almost like has little bee paws, and it's kind of moving. I swear this really happened. It's got like these little paws that's going, and it's like the bee is saying to me, it feels like what the bee is saying to me is, you can't do anything to me. I'm not really a bee, right? And I'm not that esoteric. Like, I'm pretty grounded. I don't really think about this kind of stuff. And so then the bee lands on a lamp. You know, you have like a lamp shade, and under the mm-hmm. shade is a little metal piece where you turn the thing on and off, and there's a little thing that you could sit on. So the bee sits, and I start prodding the stick at this bee, and the bee is kind of like moving its little bee paw, whatever it is, kind of like, and it's, again, it's this energy of like, whatever, I'm not really a bee. Don't waste your time trying to prod at me, whatever. So I get kind of freaked out, and I open my armoire. The bee flies into my armoire, and I leave the room and go sleep in another room. And I come back the next morning, and the bee is gone. No surprise. And I come downstairs, then Bhagavadas is sitting at the dining room table at the bottom of the stairs. And I'll go, you never know, you'll never guess what happened to me last night, right? And he says, what, the bee? So this really happened. So I said, what do you mean, what, the bee, right? And he goes, oh, yeah, the bee follows me around wherever I go. The bee looks just like Callie. And then he picks up, because he has a little altar he brings around with him on the table, this little tiny figurine of Callie that looks exactly like the bee.
Wow.
Okay, this happened, right? So, and I'm not crazy. I mean, like, I wasn't crazy then, at least, right? Right. So what do you do with that?
Yeah.
And you hear these stories about him all the time. So, you know, what do you do with that? That's really true, and that happened. And he wouldn't have known. That door was closed. He wasn't in that room. He wouldn't have known what experience I had with that bee at all. And he said to me before I said anything, what the bee? So there you go. It's complicated.
It's complicated.
I mean, this is Sky Radio. It's the perfect place to talk about the bee.
Perfect.
I couldn't talk about it on a more grounded show. They just have me committed, right? And so you hear stories like this from a lot of people about him. And so he has some connection to something
right.
that doesn't make sense in any literal form, you know?
Right.
And, yeah. And that may be a reason why very few people have stood up to him over the years.
Okay, yeah.
They're afraid of his Shakti.
Right.
They're afraid of the Guru Shakti. That's part of why they get away with things. People really think they have these powers. And maybe they do.
Right. Well, I think, again, it's this piece of, you know, what you believe within yourself, what you know within yourself, and what we keep searching for outside of ourselves. And, you know, clearly he has, whether it's an over-identification of what he believes he has, but, you know, he certainly believes in what he's doing himself.
Okay.
Yeah. So he certainly has kind of that God complex of where he is and where he's going. So it's a fascinating documentary. It's, I think a lot of us go through certain experiences, and I guess the last part of your movie has really been, was you really trying to come to terms with,
yep.
you know, all of it.
All of it.
Putting
you
it
know,
in
right.
perspective.
Well, and getting off of the more obvious question of, like, you know, the first middle part of the film was my trying to figure out who was this guy, you know, breaking the projection and all that. And then it was, okay, so I figure I kind of know what this guy is or whatever. And you know, then it was like, so now what about me? And that's the question I asked in the last part of the movie. Who am I in this, and who is this in me, right? Well, we need to ask that question about everything in our lives, really, you know, in our relationships. And that was really the question. And ultimately, without getting too into the particulars of it, it really did move me back in the direction of family and early life issues and who he reminded me of. And, you know, and that really was truly a big part of why he was so powerful for me, you know. And the only way to understand it, I mean, I'm a pretty savvy person, you know. A guy with that kind of patterning a person with that kind of patterning wouldn't normally fool me for that long unless there was some deep familial link up, right?
Right.
And there was, you know. And even now I have a soft spot for him. You know, I have a, like a little bit of a part of me that I have to work with that still wants to make excuses for my crazy zany uncle, you know. And that's the transference, right? That's just the transference. You know, that's the codependency that's engendered by these kinds of projections and transference.
Right.
You know, I started his fan page on Facebook, right?
You did?
Yeah, a couple years ago. I just said we need one, and I started it. And yeah, I mean, despite the fact that I had had this journey with him. So I clearly have had some confusion around my feelings about him. I'm a lot clearer now than I was then, but yeah.
Right. Yeah. And that's, I mean, that's where you sort of end at the film, is you're getting clearer about, you know, what he taught you, what you learned.
And what grounded spirituality is and isn't. And, you know, and you know, I do talk about what I call the power of then in Soul Shaping and in the film, which is the power of these unresolved emotional pieces to impact, shape our lives, you know.
Right.
And that they really are fundamental to our spirituality. You know, that repressed emotions are unactualized spiritual lessons. We got to work the material. You got to, you know, you got to go down deep into the emotional body if you want to grow.
Right.
Yeah. And that, this was a perfect, because I found myself trying to bypass the process with him. I didn't want to deal with the feelings. I just wanted to chalk it up to whatever and then move forward. But it was still agitating me. It wasn't resolved yet.
Right. And that's when you know it's something that you
are. It's sticky. There's something in it for you. You got to go in there and get to work with it. And so the movie, rewriting the narratives, it kept giving me an opportunity to get more and more genuine, right?
Right.
Less theoretical and more personally, subjectively genuine about what had happened for me. And then finally, the version that's out now really is the final version, because that's, it really is, I finally came clean in a way, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and which is why, you know, I love having you on the show, because you have this, you know, very grounded spirituality that is, you know, so important to our real true growing on this planet.
Yeah, you gotta, that whole New Agey stuff is, you know, it's not going to get you too far down the path, you know. It's just going to give you a little place to, a little cloud to hang on for a while, but it's not life. I mean, you know, detachment is not, detachment's a tool. It's not a life. I mean, you have to come back down into your body and work with love that lives inside of you, and stop calling it illusion, and stop disparaging the ego, and stop discrediting your personal identification. Stop it. It's like, you know, we're here for a reason. God didn't make a mistake, for God. You know, it's just obvious.
Yeah.
We've got to find a way to bring, in realment, we've got to find a way to bring it all together. And, you know, Bhagavan Das is an example of someone who didn't want to work on certain pure parts. So he, you know, many spiritual teachers, all they are one-threaded teachers. They've developed one capacity, like witnessing or meditating or, you know.
We got to wrap, Jeff.
Yeah.
Okay, well.
You got it.
Get his DVD. Either download it or go to the site. Carmageddon, the movie, or soulshaping.com. You've been listening with Jeff Brown on Intuitive Soul on Sky Radio, powered by CBS.